Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk to you about oil. Oil is the product that has the biggest single influence on the success of Russia's economy. In 2021, it's estimated that 21% of total GDP came directly from the sale of oil products. And what's really interesting with regards to the financial sanctions that have been introduced by the West is that they don't actually apply to oil right now. And the reason for that is that over the last 20 years, Europe has built up a huge dependency on Russian oil. So it was very difficult for the EU to be able to walk away from that overnight. So the sanctions that have been introduced had a staggered impact with regards to oil. Now, some countries from the West, such as the UK, the USA, and Canada, have all come out and stated that they no longer want to buy any Russian oil. So they've gone cold turkey overnight. But those countries were actually buying very small quantities. But for a lot of European countries who were receiving large deliveries by both sea and the pipelines that Russia have constructed, it was very difficult to move away from that. And this is going to be a very expensive process, because the reason that Europe has been buying Russian oil over the last 20 years is because of the close proximity and the fact that Russian oil has been the cheapest in the market. So as it sits right now, there is no formal ban in place. It is possible for European countries to buy oil, and some have been doing that over the past 7 or 8 months. However, many of the countries have taken the unilateral decision that they don't want to buy that oil, and so they've been actually going out into the market and buying from elsewhere. And what I want to share with you today is a really fascinating tracker that's been put together by S&P Global that shows the seaborne exports of Russian oil between the 22nd of January and the 22nd of September, split down by country. And you'll be able to see how the sales mix has changed over that 8 month period. And it's really fascinating to see how all the European countries have reduced their amounts dramatically, and what's been going on specifically with the purchases from China and India. And it's really interesting also to see what's been going on with regards to the total volumes. So as a spoiler alert, I can tell you that volumes initially rose dramatically, but they've come right back down over the last few months. And we'll have a look at what's been going on with regards to oil prices and the discounts that Russia have had to be offering. And when you combine all of those factors, that is a major problem from Russia's perspective. I'll then go on to talk about the EU ban that is coming into place on December the 5th, what that actually includes, and then talk about what's happening on February the 5th, because there are two stages to this ban. We'll have a look at where we are with regards to the oil price cap that Australia and the G7 are looking to implement against Russia. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of what's happened over the last 8 months and what's likely to happen over the next 3 to 6 months are for Russia, its oil sales, and the Russian economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch the whole video, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below, where you'll find links to YouTube, Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and Amazon shopping links. And once again, I'd like to say thank you so much to everybody that has supported the channel. I really appreciate it. It really does help me. I'm very grateful. Now, this chart shows the volume of oil that Russia has been exporting to a variety of different countries from the 22nd of January through to the 22nd of September. So this 8 month period covers 1 month prior to the invasion and 7 months following the invasion. So let's have a look at what the flows have been over that period. So we can see that China is the biggest export market for Russia and has stayed consistently at number one throughout the whole period. But there's been significant change in the other countries that are buying Russian exports over the course of the war. And by the end of this period, you can see that China and India are by far the two largest markets, and all of the European countries have started to diminish rapidly. Now, it's obviously fairly difficult to keep track of what's going on an individual country basis, because everything was moving around so rapidly. So let's have another look at that graphic and look at individual countries. So firstly, let's focus in on what's been going on with regards to the exports to China. And one thing to note here is that this chart only shows the seaborne crude exports. So this is oil that's being put onto ships and then sent to China over the seas. Now, there is an oil pipeline in place that sends Russian oil directly to China, which is called the ESPO pipeline. And that pipeline delivers around 700,000 barrels of oil per day to China. So that 700,000 is not included in this table. You may have heard me talking in other videos saying that the exports from Russia to China have been getting close to 2 million barrels per day. And that's the reason why this chart is showing significantly less than 2 million, because the pipeline exports are not included. But if we have a look specifically now, what's been happening with regards to the seaborne exports over the last 8 months, you can see that back in January 2022, the volume of exports was around 700,000 barrels per day, 0.7 million on this chart to start with. So let's see exactly what's been happening to those volumes over the 8 month period. So you can see that initially the volumes were actually declining through to February. As soon as the war started, those volumes started to increase again, kept pushing out through April. As we got into May, the figure got up to 1 million barrels per day. And then as we went through May into June, it stayed around that level. And then interestingly, through June and July, we saw a reduction, and then it's come back out again. And the main reasons for the fluctuations in the volumes is really what's been happening with the Chinese economy. The Chinese economy is in difficulty right now. They've got problems with regards to the property sector and also COVID lockdowns, which they're continuing to implement. So the exports from Russia to China have not increased exponentially. Russia was hoping that it would be able to increase its volumes to China significantly, maybe to 2 or 3 or 4 million barrels per day. But that simply hasn't happened for a variety of different reasons. So as I'm sure you'll be aware if you follow the channel, Russia's main focus at the moment is to increase the volume of oil it's exporting to China and India. And India represents a huge opportunity for Russia because there are 1.4 billion people who live there. It's a growing economy. It's now in the top 10 and it's aiming to be in the top 3 or 4 over the next few years. So there is a big opportunity for Russia. But one of the problems that Russia has is that it doesn't have a pipeline in place to send that oil. So all of the oil has to be loaded onto the sea. So the figures that we'll have a look in the chart now cover the entire exports from Russia to India. So as I mentioned earlier in the video, historically, Russia has not exported large volumes of oil to India. And you can see that on the 22nd of January, the total amount of exports were around 20,000 barrels per day. And that compares to 700,000 barrels per day that were going to China at that point. So India is shown here in the dark blue at the very bottom of this chart. And the development of the trading relationship has been remarkable. So let's have a look at what's happened over the last 8 months. Now, one of the fascinating things here is that in the first month prior to the war, India disappeared off this chart entirely. It then appears and it goes right the way up to number 3 very quickly. By April, it becomes the second largest market for Russian exports by sea. In May, the volumes fell back. And then in June, we saw a huge increase. And at one point, India overtook China. It then came back a little. And then where we are now, as we move towards the end of September, is that India has now become the biggest export market for Russian oil that's delivered by sea. And as I mentioned before, China does have that pipeline. So China is actually the biggest export market. But when you're looking at the amount of oil that's being transported on ships, India is currently bigger than China. Now let's have a look at what's been going on with regards to the amount of oil being exported from Russia to Turkey. And as you'll be aware if you follow the channel, Turkey is a net importer of energy products, and oil is one of the biggest costs that it has in the economy. And the Turkish economy has been under a lot of pressure over the last 18 months, partly because of the fact that it's importing large amounts of energy, and those energy prices have gone up significantly, partly because it's been running out of foreign currency, and partly because the Turkish lira has devalued so significantly. So Turkey's in a state of turmoil, and it remained entirely neutral throughout this whole situation. So prior to the war, it had a strong trading relationship with Russia and also Ukraine, and it's tried to maintain both of those positions. So it hasn't joined in any of the sanctions that Europe has applied against Russia. And actually, recently, President Erdogan and President Putin had a meeting, and they stated that they wanted to increase the amount of trade that's being done between the two nations. So let's have a look at what's been happening with regards to the amount of Russian oil being being purchased by Turkey. On January the 22nd, Turkey was the fifth largest buyer of Russian seaborne oil and was purchasing around 170,000 barrels per day. So let's have a look at what's happened over the course of the last 8 months. We can see that in the early stages, the amount that Turkey bought actually fell and Turkey dropped down this chart. And the total amount that it was buying in the early stages of the war fluctuated around 200,000 barrels per day. And that position didn't really start changing until we hit July, when Turkey started to increase the amount that it was purchasing. So the purchases went up from 200,000 to 300,000 and are now at a level of around 400,000. So over the course of the last 8 months, Turkey has more than doubled the amount of oil that it's buying from Russia. However, it is still relatively small in the context of 10 million barrels of oil per day that Russia is producing. So as I mentioned earlier in the video, Italy have actually been increasing the amount of oil that they've been purchasing for Russia. And at face value, this is really surprising because Italy is one of the biggest economies in Europe. And it's at the forefront of the sanctions that are being applied against Russia. So you would have expected the amount of oil that they were buying to have reduced, as it has done for a lot of other European countries. But let's have a look at what's actually been going on over the last 8 months. On the 22nd of January, around a month before the invasion started, Italy was the fourth largest buyer of seaborne Russian oil and was purchasing around 180,000 barrels per day. In the first month before the war started, the total amount purchased actually fell by Italy. However, once the conflict started, Italy actually started increasing the amount of oil that it was purchasing. And at one point got up to around 400,000 barrels per day. Now, through the course of the summer period, the total amount purchased has reduced to around 300,000 barrels per day. However, that still represents a significant increase on the 180,000 that it was buying prior to the war. As I mentioned earlier, the Netherlands is one of the biggest refiners of oil in Europe and therefore buys large volumes of oil in on a wholesale basis, which it then processes and sells on to other countries. So let's have a look at the Russian export volumes to the Netherlands. On the 22nd of January, the Netherlands was the second largest buyer of Russian oil behind China and was purchasing over 500,000 barrels per day. In the first month, which was pre-war, the total amount purchased remained constant. And in the initial period, Netherlands increased the purchases. However, over the next few months, we saw a steady decline in the total volumes being purchased as the Netherlands took a conscious decision not to buy Russian oil. However, in July, we saw the volumes starting to increase again as prices started to come down. And then since that period, we've seen a significant reduction. And by the 22nd of September, the total volumes being purchased were down to 170,000 barrels per day. So a significant reduction from the 500,000 that were being purchased historically. Now, the last thing that I want to look at in this graphic are the total purchases being made by all of the countries who are party to the sanctions against Russia. So these are all countries that have said they don't want to buy Russian oil. There is no official sanction in place that's stopping them from doing it. So this is more voluntary rather than compulsory right now. But let's have a look at what's been happening. All of the countries, excluding the Netherlands and Italy, which we've looked at separately, that have confirmed that they are party to the sanctions against Russia, are shown in light blue on this chart. So they include South Korea, that were the third largest purchaser of Russian oil prior to the war, buying 320,000 barrels per day. Poland, who were buying 170,000 barrels per day. Lithuania and France, 140,000 barrels per day each. Romania and Denmark, 120,000 barrels per day each. Finland and Germany, 90,000 barrels per day. Japan and the UK, 70,000 barrels per day each. Bulgaria, 60,000 barrels per day. Spain, Greece and Sweden, 50,000 barrels per day each. And the USA, who are buying 20,000 barrels per day. So let's have a look at what's happened over the last 8 months. So we can see that in the first month prior to the war, everything carried on as normal. But as soon as the war started, we started to see a significant reduction in purchases from a lot of different countries. There were some fluctuations for countries like South Korea, who bought some and then reduced their amounts. But over the course of the last 12 months, the countries that are sanctioning Russia have dramatically reduced their purchases. Bulgaria is the only country that has actually increased the amount of Russian oil it's purchasing, and that's because of a special arrangement that's been put in place by the EU. The Bulgarian economy is struggling to find alternative sources, it doesn't have enough cash, and therefore it's been given an exemption. And you can see by the 22nd of September, the vast majority of the countries that we just discussed have actually disappeared from this chart entirely. So they've reduced all of their purchases to zero. The only countries that remain on the list are Poland, who've reduced their purchases from 170,000 barrels per day to 50,000, and Romania, who've reduced theirs from 120,000 to 40,000. So this really shows the size of the problem that Russia is facing. It's losing huge amounts of volumes on a daily basis, and it's struggling to be able to replace them. This chart shows the movement in the price of a barrel of crude oil over the course of the last 12 months. So if you follow the channel, I'm sure you've seen this chart before. You'll be familiar with the shape of the curve. What we've seen is that from the start of the war on the 24th of February, there was a huge increase in oil prices. They rose from around about $85 per barrel to more than $120. And prices remained extremely high in the period through to the end of May. However, because of concerns over a global slowdown, and particularly a slowdown in the Chinese economy, we've seen the price of oil steadily reducing over the course of the last few months, and prices are now back down to a similar level to what they were trading at prior to the start of the war. And the reason I wanted to highlight this is to show the impact of this on Russian revenues. So if we jump to this chart, which shows the total amount of exports over the last 12 months or so, you can see that in the early stages of the war, Russia actually was exporting more oil than it was historically. They got up above 3.5 million barrels per day in April and May. And that coincided with this period of extremely high prices when barrels of oil were selling for more than $100 each. However, over the course of the last 4 months, we've seen a significant reduction in the amount of oil that Russia is selling, and it's now down to around 3 million barrels per day. And that period has coincided with a major fall in oil prices. So from $110 per barrel that we were seeing a few months ago, it's now down to somewhere in the region of $85. So that represents a significant reduction in the total revenues for Russia, because the combination of a fall of 500,000 barrels per day in volume and a drop of around $25 per barrel in price means that the total amount of Russian revenues have fallen by around $12.5 million per day. However, in reality, the situation for Russia is significantly worse than this, because Russia has not been selling its oil at market prices. It's actually had to introduce a discount policy to encourage countries like China and India to take more of their volumes. So let's have a look at the discounts that Russia have been offering throughout the whole of this period. This chart shows the price difference between Russia's crude oil and Brent crude oil since the start of February 2022. So you can see that at the start of this period, there was virtually no difference between Russian crude and Brent crude. However, almost instantly after the invasion started, there was a huge drop in the price of Russian crude. And at the start of March, the average price of a barrel of Russian crude was trading for around $28 less than it was for Brent crude. And over the course of the next month, as the war continued and more countries made a conscious decision not to buy Russian oil, the discount actually increased further. And by the start of April, it was around $35 per barrel. So that means that despite the fact that the market price of oil was around $100 per barrel at that time, Russia was only achieving a price of around $65 for the sale of all of its oil. So the increased volumes that Russia was seeing at that time of around 15% were being more than offset by a 35% reduction in the price. So on a net basis, Russia was actually doing worse from a total revenue perspective. And if we look at this graph, you can see that for the four-month period from the start of April through to the start of August, that discount remained fairly constant at around $35 per barrel. And over that period, we've seen prices starting to come down significantly. So as I just showed you, from the highs that we saw at the end of May of around $110, we're now down to around $85. And a $35 discount against an $85 price obviously takes the price for Russia down to $50 per barrel. And we haven't seen a market price of $50 per barrel for years. Now, as you can see from this chart, over the course of the last month or so, Russia has actually started to reduce the amount of discount that it's offering to purchasers. And it's interesting that over that period, Russia has seen a reduction in the amount of exports, as I just showed you in the chart earlier. So what this tells us is that buyers are price sensitive. If Russia isn't offering these significant discounts, then they would prefer to buy their oil from somebody else. And that puts Russia into a very difficult situation because they don't want to keep selling oil at a massive discount because on a net basis, they're losing out. But the problem they're facing is that if they do try to increase their prices, they lose volume and therefore lose revenue because they're not getting the sales. So it's catch 22. They found themselves in a very difficult situation here. People will buy Russian oil if it's cheap, but if it isn't cheap, then the downside of doing that is too high. And India and China would prefer to buy their oil from elsewhere. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video firstly because I was super excited by S&P Global's tracker. I think that is a fantastic piece of analysis. Really fascinating to see what's been going on with each individual country, how the sales mix has changed over the course of the Ukraine war. And it's really fascinating to see what's been going on, particularly with India and China. So at the start of this conflict, India didn't even register as one of Russia's customers. They were lost in the roundings. But very quickly, because of the discounts that were being offered, India stepped up. And as you saw from the tracker, India has actually been receiving more oil over the sea than China has. China obviously is receiving oil via the pipeline as well. So overall, China is still Russia's biggest customer. But India have come from nowhere and all of a sudden have become a major business partner of Russia. But unfortunately, from Russia's perspective, at the same time as that was happening, they've lost most of their sales to Western countries. So we saw the light blue section of that tracker disappear almost entirely. Most of the countries went from buying hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil per day to none. So Russia's facing the biggest challenge in its history to be able to find new markets for its oil. And when you look at what's happened over the last 8 months, there was initially a surge in seaborne exports of Russian oil. It went from around 3 million barrels a day to almost 4 million barrels a day. However, that's come right back down to 3 million. And the problem that Russia has is that when you look at what's been happening to prices, they are on a downward trend right now. So Russia's got a combination of falling sales and falling prices. So obviously that means falling revenue from Russia's perspective. But the situation is actually much worse than that because Russia has had to actually offer a discount to the market prices. So the fall in prices is actually much worse from Russia's perspective. And the net price that Russia's been achieving recently of $50 or $60 dates back to market prices from 2 or 3 years ago. So you can see here what's been going on with regards to the revenue for Russia's perspective. It's been going down. And as we go forward over the next 3 to 6 months, the EU ban is going to kick in. So all of those countries who are still buying from Russia will stop overnight. In addition to that ban, there is a maritime shipping ban coming in also on December the 5th. So Russia's going to find it even more difficult to be able to find the ships to put the oil onto to send to India and Asia. And in addition to that, there's a refined products ban that's coming in on February the 5th. So over the course of the next few months, Russia's going to see an even greater fall in its sales and it needs to find those new markets. And in addition to all of this, the oil price cap that G7 and Australia have been working on is coming into effect on December the 5th. So what will happen at that point? India and China will have the opportunity to say to Russia, we would like to continue buying 1 million barrels a day or whatever the volume might be, but we're under pressure from the G7 and Australia to comply with this oil price cap. And if we don't, we are running the risk of secondary sanctions and losing all of our trade, all of our exports that we sell to the West. Now, India and China's biggest export markets are the West. They are not Russia. Russia only has a population of around 144 million people out of a global population getting close to 8 billion. So Russia is really small from a population point of view and also from an economic point of view. In 2021, Russia was the 11th largest country in the world for GDP. However, its GDP has fallen dramatically since then. And there's a very high possibility that it's now fallen out of the top 20. So Russia is not a major player on a global scale. India and China need to retain their export sales into the West. They are the biggest part of their markets. So they don't want to run the risk of these secondary sanctions. And I've made a number of videos recently where I've cited examples of Indian companies refusing to do things because they don't want to run the risk of those secondary sanctions. So there's a really high possibility that come December the 5th, India and China will be saying to Russia, we are happy to keep the volumes coming, but we can only pay a price of $63 or whatever the oil price cap is agreed at. Now, from Russia's point of view, they have the choice at that point of either stopping all of those exports or agreeing to that deal. And as I mentioned earlier in the video, if they stop the exports, they don't have anywhere to actually send that oil to. That means they will need to stop production on some of those facilities. And that is the last thing that Russia wants to do right now. They've lost their business partners. They've lost access to technology. They've lost a lot of know-how. They don't want to be messing about with those production facilities because in the future, if they did want to switch them back on, they could find themselves in a very sticky situation, literally. So the overall summary here is that Russia is currently seeing a fall in its sales volumes. It's seeing a fall in prices in the general market. It's seeing a fall in its revenues because of the discounts that it's offering. And over the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to see the EU ban kicking in. We're going to see the oil price ban kicking in. And it's very likely that Russia's revenues from oil are going to drop dramatically. And oil is the biggest single contributor to Russia's economy. It makes up around 20% of GDP. So the fall in oil revenues is going to have a massive impact on the Russian economy. Now, the recent estimates from the Russian authorities was that they were saying that GDP would fall by 4 or 5% in 2022. However, what we're seeing from the oil revenue side of things is that it's likely that we're going to have a 20 or 30% fall in those revenues. And when you link that to the GDP of Russia, it is very difficult to believe that they are going to get away with a 4 or 5% fall in 2022 and 2023. It's likely to be double digit, and it could be significant double digits. And obviously, that is an absolute disaster from Russia's point of view, because it becomes a vicious circle. As they get less revenue, that means that they've got less capital to be able to invest into all of their infrastructure. And this is at a time when they've lost their business partners. So they need to keep investing into new projects, such as a new pipeline delivering oil and gas to China if they want to keep those sales going, more investment into shipping to be able to send oil and liquefied natural gas to India, new liquefied natural gas facilities. All of these things cost tens of billions of dollars to be able to put in place. And Russia just simply doesn't have it right now. So there's a real risk that as we see this fall in revenues from oil, we see the economy going down, we see less investment into new infrastructure, then that means that they have less sales of other products such as gas. And that means a further fall in revenues and a further contraction and a further reduction in investment. And so it goes on. So this is a really, really critical time for Russia. And the next 3 to 6 months could spell a period of major disaster from an economic perspective. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when they happen. If you've liked what I've said today, if you thought it was interesting, educational and thought-provoking, please give me that thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.